got to every loose ball they needed to get to, and A&M beat Tennessee today. I mean, to me, it's that simple. And when you look at all the things that were going on in that game, Tennessee had another one of those days early where they couldn't shoot it. And it wasn't until they got going late, and the game was seemingly out of reach. And you had the sequence there at the end. I know, and we'll unpack that. You had the sequence there at the end where it looked like you could have called. There were a couple of opportunities there to perhaps call goaltending. Now, something happened there. It was either basket interference by Tennessee and Reese on the layup in question, or it was basket interference by the A&M defender. And then there was one other side to that. There was the glass slapping on the initial layup itself on a pump fake, just the, what I thought, gratuitous slapping of the glass there in that situation. When somebody gets you up in the air, you just go and you shake the cage a little bit. So now Tennessee's next task will be on the road with Arkansas on Tuesday. And then home with Bruce Pearl and Auburn 1 week from today. If you want to get in with us, 865-200-5402 is our number. Again, 865-200-5402. What a depressing result today. Tennessee loses at home to Texas A&M. And, you know, we've said about this Tennessee team all year. How do they have 12 wins? It's remarkable they have 12 wins. It really is. I know that makes people mad when I say that. You watch a game like today, and it really makes you appreciate what they've done. It really makes you appreciate how hard and how well these kids have played. But if you look inside the numbers, you just knew at halftime, Tennessee in the first half shot 25% from the floor. They gave up 8 offensive rebounds, and they were only down 2 at the half, but you knew that wasn't going to happen. A&M comes out, first 7 points of the half, they took a 9-point lead, then Punter hit one of his many timely threes on the day to end the 9-0 run, 12:50 to go in the game, Tennessee down 43-28, Punter hits a 3, the Vols go down 12 again, Reese makes a 3, a little knuckleball 3 from the top of the key, and it's a 45-36 game. The Vols got within 9, and then A&M ran off 5 straight, got it back to 14, and you had some questionable, interesting officiating today. I don't blame the game on that. And I don't blame the game on that closing sequence error. Although it would have been interesting to see what would have happened. It would have been interesting to see what would have happened. In the game, the most interesting number to me, I'm being told to quit calling it interference. It's goaltending. I'm very sorry. Interference is offensive. But I'm open to the fact that it could be basket interference on the Vols, because I'm not sure if that's Reese's hand or if that's the hand of an A&M defender. And if you can tell me that, you got better eyes than I do, because I can't make that distinction. And I was watching a replay online a second ago, and I can't make the determination whether that was an A&M player or whether that was Reese that swiped the ball off the rim there. It looked like the ball was going in. I will say that. At any rate, Tennessee took 52 shots in that game. 29 of those shots were three-pointers. You're not going to win playing that way. You're just not. I mean, you have to have some semblance of balance. You just have to have some semblance of balance. And the Vols today, it was just one of those, you know, I hate saying this because I hate this, but we're going to say this a few more times during this year. When the shots don't go in, when they don't go down, we're going to have this. we're going to have this. And meanwhile, Mike DeBoard on Tennessee's campus, and that's got to make everybody smile. A guy that could be the next, just might be the next offensive coordinator here. That's got to make everybody thrilled under the sound of my voice today. That's tough, though. Losing that game is tough. Huge crowd today. John Monroe said they showed another replay of it, and it showed the A&M player. You talking about the replay they showed on television? I can't determine whether that was an A&M player or not. I don't know. I mean, if you can, I mean, more power to you. I didn't clearly, the look I saw, which the two TV replays and then the one online, I couldn't determine whether or not that's an A&M player. If you get that bucket there, might be a different game. Might be a different game. This is a game right here where you absolutely miss McGee. I'm not making excuses up. I mean, you got to play who's in front of you. But that's a game right there where Tennessee, the lack of any kind of, and I mean any kind of post presence in a game like that really hurts you. Now, I've said this at times this year, and it's hard for me to figure it out. Why doesn't Bachman get more minutes? Why doesn't Bachman get more minutes? I can't for the life of me figure that out. There's a guy that needs to play a little bit. Bachman needs to play, doesn't he? Doesn't Bachman need to play a little bit? More than he does? And he was stroking it today. I don't know. 865-200-5402 if you want to get in with us today. Again, 865-200-5402. Tennessee, though, with so few answers in that game today. And waited till late to get it on track offensively. And it's hard for me to determine exactly what happened on the basket interference play. And I retweeted the look that our folks at RTI gave me. It's hard for me to determine exactly what happened there. It's tough for me to tell. And for me to see that. Now, if you can see it, again, more power to you. Is it a different game? Maybe. It could have been a different game. But a 20-5 run to start the second half was definitive. Let's go to the phones. 865-200-5402. Very, very tough day to do your smart way, Dalton Bearing and Hydraulics. Tennessee basketball overtime. Donnie Tindall, that's a good basketball team we just played. They remind me a lot of Alabama. They're big. They cause us a lot of trouble on the offensive end. There's no question they cause them a lot of trouble on the offensive end. And Russell Smith pointing out, A&M outscored Tennessee 30-10 in the paint. You're just not going to win games like that. He also, Tindall said, we didn't have the energy level I would have expected us to have. I give A&M a lot of credit for the way they defended. Now, some are calling this a terrible missed call, including my friends over at RTI and Reed Carringer. I'm going to have to get a second look at it. Tindall, in comparing the game to Alabama, said this is not a good thing. The guys weren't aggressive on offense. Our energy level was not where it needed to be. Touche to that, brother. Let's go back to our phones. If you want to get in with us, 865-200-5402. Love to hear from you today. And we'll get in. And KD Lewis, you're starting to piss me off, dude. I don't know if that's your intention, but I'm going to call you out right now, man. Don't do that. It's not necessary. Konzo Martin is in California. KD. He ain't coming back. Don't do that. Okay? And we can laugh at Konzo Martin. Don't stick your finger in my face today. We don't need to do that, man. It's not necessary. And if you want to go on Twitter and see what I'm talking about, have at it. I'm not going to respond to that today. I mean, he's saying I'm going to start a petition. James Crippens. James Crippens said that, not KD. KD, you're my guy. KD's picking up for Tindall. My bad, buddy. I'd even start for Basilio here. A&M was just better. I'm going to bring Hatfield in now, and then we're going to the phones. Hatfield, your first thoughts on what we saw today?
This team's not a team, Tony, that can dig itself a 17-point hole and get out of it. They shot the ball so poorly early, and actually tonight, even though the numbers kind of don't belie it, because they missed, especially Daniel House missed some shots he's normally going to make. I didn't think the defense was very good for the most part today. I mean, A&M got the ball where they wanted it and got good shots on about every possession. It just wasn't one of their better performances. And I mean, this team's going to have nights like that. This team doesn't have enough of a margin for error to come out and have Robert Hubbs and Josh Richardson only having 4 points deep into the game. I mean, they both were instrumental in the late flurry to get back in the game. But if you look up at the scoreboard and those two have combined for 4 points and you're in the second half, you can pretty much assume Tennessee's in a pretty deep hole.
And then at the end, you have the flurry. Tennessee, being the team that they are, does not quit. They will not quit, even as poorly as they played at both ends of the floor. I mean, today was so far from their best effort. They still managed to play their way back into the game. And then the sequence there at the end, Keith, what did you see at the sequence at the end?
Oh, I mean, I think it's the ball the punter lays up rolls in instead of rolling off the rim. I think Tennessee's got them on the ropes at that point. I think that's the difference in the game.
Does
ball rolls out and they end up getting a run out, and that's what happens.
Now, from your vantage point in the arena, and I know you're pretty close, did it look to you like A&M took the ball off the rim? Did it look to you like Reese took the ball off the rim? Talk to me.
I couldn't really tell if anybody got a hand on it, Tony. It looked like it was coming out. I mean, I don't think, certainly, I mean, even if it's coming out and it's still in the cylinder, it's a goaltend if they touch it, and it's an offensive goaltend if Tennessee touches it. But I didn't get the impression the ball was going in otherwise. I didn't get the impression the ball was going in. I mean, had it not hung on the rim the way it did, given that they didn't block Reese out properly, it just comes straight off the rim instead of kind of hanging there. I think he probably tips it back in.
It looked like House had slapped the goal as well on the way, on the ball up. And I talked with somebody intimately familiar with the rules who said that's a referee's discretion.
And they never call that.
They never call it. They never. And he said the only time they're going to call it is if you do it in order to move the backboard. Otherwise.
Right.
If you're making a semi-honest play on the ball, which
yeah,
it looked like
yeah,
he got hung up in the air, and that looks like that's what he did, they're not going to call that. Even though, to the spirit of the law, to the spirit of the rule, if you wanted to be legalistic about it, that's a goaltending.
Oh yeah, they could call that, but that's something you almost never see called, especially late, especially as physical and as athletic as the game is now, Tony. There are guys making contact with the backboard anytime the ball's within 3 feet of the basket. So Tennessee would have been very, very fortunate to have gotten a whistle on that. And I don't think, I can't imagine that call was going to be forthcoming. I'm certainly not surprised it was.
Donnie Tindall said, and then we'll go to our phones. Donnie Tindall said, I thought our team was complacent after our recent success. If we're not on the razor's edge, we can't win. They didn't have the same body language, Keith, that they've had in recent games. It's interesting how their two Saturday games with the two huge crowds, they've put up complete stinkers. for the level they've played to this year.
Oh, I agree. But one thing, Tony, that I think bears watching, and maybe it may just be that it was one of those days, and I think A&M probably has better personnel than Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it might be something to watch, that the one guy who has seen Donnie Tindall multiple times that he's played this year, they handled that defense pretty easily.
Elaborate on that.
Kennedy and Donnie coached against each other in the OVC when he was at Murray State and Donnie was at Moorhead. So, I mean, that's not his first rodeo seeing Donnie's defense.
Mm-hmm.
So, the granted part of that is that Alex Caruso, I mean, he's one of my favorite players.
I love him. He's such a fun player to watch.
And today, he actually makes shots. So, I mean, he was completely deadly on Tennessee today. I mean, when he makes shots, that's pretty tough.
Back to our phones we go. I think A&M is a sleeper team in the league from the standpoint of, and I said this on Twitter and people laughed at me, I think they're an NCAA, the way they played today, and if you look at the start they're off to in the league, and they had Kentucky on the ropes, that team did, they looked to me like an NCAA tournament team. The way they're balanced, inside, outside, they're pretty well coached. I mean, that's not a horrible loss today. It's not as bad as people would think it is.
Well, I can't imagine anybody thinking that's a really bad loss, because it's a team that's 4-2 in the league, and outside of kind of an aberration against Alabama where they got blown out on the road, their other loss is a 20-point loss, is a buzzer-beating loss at home to Kentucky. I think that probably tells you that that's a pretty good basketball team.
Back to the phones we go. Thank you, Keith. Any other thoughts before I go back to the phones?
No, I mean, I think that's about where it's at. I think a loss today, I mean, you're still going to be, nobody else has got one loss in the league, do they? I mean, this means Tennessee's still in that gaggle of teams down behind Kentucky.
Interesting game today.
I don't think it necessarily hurts them.
Interesting game. Tennessee got pounded today on the offensive glass for the second straight game, third straight game, fourth straight game. They gave up in the first half 8 offensive rebounds, limited State to only 4 in the second half, but the ones they surrendered were killer, killer, killer second chance points. And indicative of the way the game went, when Richardson slapped the ball away from Caruso from behind and it caroms off the big man and goes right back over like a puck in hockey. Like the guy's a defenseman sitting there. I mean, there were more 50-50 balls in that game that just went, for whatever reason, A&M's way. It just wasn't our day today.
Oh, no, Tennessee didn't play particularly well, Tony, but every possible break pretty much went the other way. It was just not their day, and that's going to happen. I mean, once you get past Kentucky in this league and LSU when they deign to show up and play.
Yeah.
Most nights it's a toss up in this league. It's whoever shoots the ball, whoever shoots it a little better, and whoever gets the bounces. I think it's that balance for the most part in this league, and I think you saw that again today.
Tindall said Devin Bachman, answering my question, is he gets really fatigued really quickly, which is why he's not playing more. Bachman was 2 of 3 today, 1 of 2 from 3-point land, 2 of 2 from the foul line. He only played 14 minutes. I'd have loved to have seen him play more. Stretch that out over a full game. They'll get him in with some conditioning, get him in better shape going into next year. I think he's going to make a really nice player. Let's go back to our phones and get as many people in here as we possibly can. It's your Smart Way Dalton and Bearing and Hydraulics. Tennessee basketball overtime. Tennessee falls today to 12-6 on the year with a 67-61 loss to Texas A&M. And the Vols record in conference is now 4-2 with a trip to Arkansas and then a home date with Auburn coming up next week. And I would take a split next week. I'll just go on the record and say I would take a split. Let's go to the phones and grab our first call. Hello.
Tony, I wasn't feeling too bad about today's game at all until you reminded me about that old washed up offense coordinator that's over there on campus interviewing for that job. But let's get to the game. I don't feel real bad about it. First of all, on the goaltending or basket interference, I was sitting here with my son watching it, and we thought for sure that Derrick Reese had hit it until they finally showed the third replay. And they showed a different replay on the third one, and it was obvious that the Arkansas guy knocked it off of the cylinder.
Was it in the cylinder, though?
To the Texas A&M guy.
It was
obvious, and Larry Connolly was even bragging on what a great job the camera crew did on getting that. But it was obvious that it was basket interference on the defense.
So it was in the cylinder, in your opinion?
Yeah, it wasn't going in. It was coming out of the cylinder, but it was definitely defensive basket interference. The bucket should have been counted.
I'm with Keith. Tennessee gets a bucket there. A&M's coming apart at the seams. They're going to lose that game.
Yeah, I mean, even the announcers, they were bragging on their camera crew for finally getting that great angle at the end of it, because initially I thought Reese had hit it, but he didn't. But, guys, I'll tell you what, that was just a bad matchup for us. You know, you look at their starting lineup, you know, 6'5", 6'5", 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", and they got that big Trocha Morales kid coming off the bench at 6'10". I mean, they were just long and athletic, just like Alabama. It's like y'all said, just a bad matchup for us.
And they clinically attacked our defense. That's what they did. They clinically, and when we couldn't, and the other side of this is when you put all that together with the fact that we couldn't throw it in the ocean, you're just not going to win that game.
Yeah, and you're talking about Balkman.
Yeah,
he and Punter were the only ones that did anything in the first half.
Yeah.
Balkman, all seven of his points were in the first half. He just for whatever reason disappeared. I know what Tindall said, but he just disappeared in the second half.
He's got to get him to the point where he can play more, because he could really be a contributor in time.
Well, I got to think his shoulder's part of that too. I've got to think the fact that he's beat up, you can't stretch him out in practice for fear you get him hurt there. I mean, I think that's the tough problem they've got with him right now.
Mm.
Keith, what's wrong with his shoulder? I didn't know he had a shoulder problem.
He's got a tear in his shoulder. I think it's a partially torn labrum, is what they've talked about, in his shoulder. So they're going to wait till after the season to have surgery on him. I mean, it's technically his non-shooting arm, but I mean, any injury to your arms in basketball is bad.
Yeah, he hurt that thing early on. We're talking about back in early December, late November. It's something he's been dragging around for a while now.
Yeah, torn labrums are no fun,
I would say.
One other thing, guys, what's up with Willie Carmichael? He's just disappeared.
I mean, I think
even when he's in the game, he's not doing anything. What's up with that?
Nah, he's a kid, like Keith just said. I mean, here's the thing that O'Neal used to say, and he's right. You watch any freshman basketball players, with the exception of the guys at Kentucky, but most freshmen basketball players are going to hit walls. They're going to go through periods where it just doesn't work for them. And Willie Carmichael today was a spectator. You know, now I will give him credit because today in the game, Carmichael only committed two fouls, which means that somehow he gave one back. He must have gone the smart way and paid on time, and they actually gave him a foul back on the way out the door because he only had two. He usually gets off the bus, Keith, with three fouls.
Keith, do you think it's an issue where Tindall may need to look at bringing in somebody to coach post players?
No, they don't need players. What are you talking about?
I think Al Pinkins is a pretty good post coach. I just think you're in a position where I think it's just a situation where he doesn't. And one thing that hurts them a whole lot right now is one of the best things. And I mean, any good coach will tell you one of the ways those guys learn the most is playing against guys in practice who already know how to do it, who have been through the wars, and we don't have any of those guys.
865-200-5402. So we're already looking for a new big man. We don't need big men. So what are we going to do with the big man coach? Tariq Owens, I mean, he looks like those things you used to get in the sugar daddies back in the day. Remember those things, Keith, with the big body,
yes,
this big head and a skinny body?
They were a really good way to rip, to tear some fillings out of your teeth.
Those things were in fact, when we're done tonight, I'm going to go get myself a sugar daddy. Do they still sell them?
I think they do. And sugar babies, which are even worse, the little pellet,
little pellet
versions. Yeah, those are a really good way to rip fillings out of your teeth.
Today in the game, there were several other, Armani Moore had a couple of missed wide open layups. It was a day where Tennessee couldn't throw it in the ocean. The Vols shot 25% in the first half, dug a hole for themselves, ended up with the game 38% after shooting 50% in the second half, 14 of 28, but several of those buckets were of the desperation variety, and I'm being told pretty much universally across the board that the final replay they showed, which I've got to tell you, when I'm in here and I'm getting set up for what I'm doing, and every once in a while, I guess I will have to, I must not have seen the replay that everybody's talking about. And so I'll defer to you if you want to tell me today that the definitive replay was that the Mississippi State player touched the ball when it's in the cylinder. But I go back to what Keith said, which is, you got to finish that. And then Armani Moore earlier, Keith, had a dunk. And he tried to lay the ball up for some reason. Yeah. Take that thing strong. You're at home.
Oh,
you've
no,
got
God.
A
and,
huge
and the thing,
crowd
and the thing
there.
Is, it obviously wasn't that obvious in the arena because there was no grand reaction as if that was a goaltend on that play, Tony. I mean, there was no hue and cry in the arena, certainly. So the folks watching it live, not many, if anybody, noticed.
Now, the continuation on Josh Richardson is a call they
horrific.
Missed.
That's well,
horrible.
If Donnie had not, had the confidence in his team to maybe claw back in the game, my guess is he draws at least one, if not two, technicals there.
He mouthed to the official.
That's an abysmal call.
What he mouthed to the official was, look at the video, look at the video, look at the video. And.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't even, I didn't think that was
even close.
I thought that was a trope. I think he just assumed that since Josh was at such a weird angle and so off balance that he couldn't have been shooting when it was obvious that's exactly what he was doing. But
back to our phones we go, 865-200-5402. Tennessee falls to 12-6 on the year, 4-2 in the league, a mystifying 1-2 home conference record now. That is rather odd. Against an A&M team that's all of a sudden a road warrior. And that is the first time all year that A&M won a basketball game when leading at halftime. How you like those apples in the conference? Back to the phones we go. And let's grab another call. Hello and welcome.
I guess I'm going to have to quit going. I'm apparently the one thing that will make this Tennessee team not play with on the razor's edge.
Talk to me. They gave you they gave you a great effort today, Beano, didn't they?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, Tony. I thought this was the first time. I thought this was the first time when our opponent played with a better effort than we did. Now today's the nightmare day we knew was coming. A team that's too physically strong for us in the front court, mm-hmm. with a back court with a handle good enough where you can't turn them over. I thought, you know, against Alabama, I thought Tennessee played really poorly, and Alabama played in a tree. I believe Texas A&M is just flat better than us.
Totally agree with that.
I don't think there's any doubt, Tony. If you were drafting a team out of those two teams, certainly three of the first five you would take are on A&M's team, and I'm not sure it's not four of the first five.
If you looked at it, guys, and I had an opportunity to sit right under the bucket today, Jones and Roberson and those guys, they're absolute men under there. And we've got threes playing four. And they've done it well, but that's what we have. We've got two and three guys playing four and five. And but I did see some rebounds that were more about they wanted it worse than we did, and they beat us back a lot. And those are things we haven't seen. But all in all, that's a basketball team that's just flat better than us.
And don't you think at some point when you're playing nine guys, that you're going to have spells of this during the year? Aren't you going to have spells where you go through this during the season?
Oh, sure. And I think you're going to have moments too, Tony, where it's just human nature. You get frustrated when, by sheer nature of them being bigger than you, they're getting all the rebounds. But you get frustrated, and maybe you take a playoff mentally, and you don't get one you could have gotten. That isn't about strength and everything. It's just that you didn't move quick enough, and he was a step quicker than you. I think that happens occasionally. I mean, these guys, I mean, they're not robots.
One of the things that you guys may not have gotten being out today in the arena was there was an exchange among a couple of our players. Richardson at one time speaking with Reese, and then another time was upset with Hubs as they let guys get behind them and get some easy baskets. There seemed to be today from us, for the first time that I've seen in a while, some miscommunication defensively. Just some things we haven't seen up to this point.
I think, well, I think Johnny, one of those exchanges was right in front of me, the one between Reese and Richardson, and that was shortly after, within that series, Reese let Jones go right through him to
yes.
get a rebound and then failed to get back the next play. I don't think we're seeing miscommunication. I think for the first time we saw some guys not play with all-out effort, and their captain was getting on them.
So you think that's what that was about? That wasn't about, we need to go over this communication. That was about, I'm sticking a foot up your rear end here?
That's what the one that I saw looked like to me, Tony, based on the plays I had seen occur right before that.
Mm.
But I could, you know, we're both speculating. I have no idea exactly, but that's the way I read it at the game.
Keith, what did you see on those plays?
Well, I thought Derek Reese didn't have a very good day. I think he got frustrated. And I think he let that affect his play. I mean, this team can't take a possession off because of something that happened 45 seconds ago. This team's got to, I mean, they don't have enough physical strength and athleticism up front to rebound just by sheer talent. I mean, they've got to be in there scratching and clawing on every play, and if they take a play off and the other team misses a shot, there's a better than 50-50 chance the other team's getting the ball.
Happened
multiple times.
Bino, what was your take on the goaltending?
Tony, I was on the other end of the floor, and when I came up the first replay I saw, I was like, I thought Reese touched it. I never saw the definitive one that people are talking about where A&M touched it, but I believe Keith's right, irregardless, and he played well today. Punter had missed a layup. The ball was coming out. If he just makes a layup, then there's nothing to be said about this. I don't believe the interference caused the ball to come out. I believe it's coming out and on the outside of the cylinder.
Boy, I tell you what, a wonderful effort by that guy today. Wow.
Yeah, he played really well.
I mean, he balled out. If it's not for him, Tennessee's nowhere near. They're not in the zip code in that game. Any other final thoughts for us, Beanster?
Here, one more thing.
And I want you, hey, by the way, I want you to stay the hell away from that arena the rest of the year.
You got it, Tony.
Okay.
You got it, I promise.
Continue.
Now we've had two straight Saturday crowds, good crowds,
mm-hmm.
where Tennessee didn't play very well. And this time, in my opinion, both times had some periods where they didn't play with the level of effort that we're accustomed to seeing Donnie Kendall's team play. I never dreamed it, but the best thing in the world for this team is that Bruce Pearl is bringing a team in here next Saturday, because that place is going to be alive, and our team will be more than ready to play, and whatever equity they lost with these two home appearances, I think they'll earn it right back next Saturday.
That's why you're absolutely, in my opinion, the best in the business. That's a great observation. Is that not a great observation, Hatfield?
I think so, absolutely.
Guys, I always enjoy it. I'll be listening.
Thank you. Hatfield, you didn't like it, did you, when I said Bino was the best in the business? You didn't like that.
Didn't bother me at
all. I sensed some heat between you two.
No, my heat's cross town, Tony.
Let's go back to our phones at 865-200-5402. Again, 865-200-5402.
Oh, there's a new name for that guy, Tony. Henceforth, he shall henceforth be Mickey Laurinaitis.
Let's go back to our phones, 865-200-5402. going to be a really interesting week coming up. That trip to Arkansas will not be a picnic. But here's the thing about Arkansas, Keith. I love the way they play for our basketball team. Tennessee will not get blown out in that game because Arkansas gives you a lot of space. It is an opposite of what you, they're not going to carve you up the way A&M did today. They're just not. It's just not how they play. Yeah, it's not how they're built and it's not how they play. Lane Kiffin apparently has struck out in his quest for the 49ers job. He's going to remain at Alabama for another season.
Well, that's a tough gig.
That's really, yeah. It's got to be really hard to coach all those five-star players. Let's go back to the phones and grab our next call. Hello and welcome. You're on your Smartway Dalton Bearing and Hydraulics Tennessee Basketball Overtime.
Hey, good afternoon, Tony and Keith.
Hey, JJ. Welcome, man.
Hey. I agree as far as the matchup goes. A&M, their front court was the difference. They were balanced. Their guys up top handled the ball well. They've just passed it and seemed pretty smooth. And have these guys been around for a couple of years together? I have no idea about
them. For the most part. I mean, House, this is the first time House and Jones have been eligible to play. But, I mean, Caruso's been there a while. Roberson's been there a while. Green's been there a while. I mean, it's not a completely new bunch.
And by the way, it's a bunch that's won their three straight games against us. Last time we beat them was in about nine overtimes, if you'll remember.
Yes. The infamous watch party at the Goalpost Tavern.
Interesting.
Yeah, their front court, they had good touch around the basket. They shot the ball well. They moved the ball well. And a couple of things that I see strategically for us is, when the ball did go down low, and it was kind of obvious that they were going to be shooting the ball down low, it seemed like they outnumbered us under the basket, where we had guys on the perimeter that I thought could have crashed the board more instead of just kind of standing out there guarding no one, basically. And I think we could have done a better job of boxing out. I wonder if you guys saw that, if you have any kind of thought on that.
Well, I thought they got some offensive rebounds where we didn't exactly kill ourselves getting between them and the ball, but I think that's just by the construction of this team and its utter lack of size, that's going to happen some. Certainly, I think we got caught a little shorthanded under the basket a couple of times, especially when we tried to extend the defense and turn them over some, but I think, again, I think that's just a product of what the personnel is that Tennessee has right now. I think that's just something they're going to have to live with to a great extent. There are going to be very few nights that they don't get beat up, I think, on the boards a little bit.
Yeah, and tonight, JJ, especially in that first half, I mean, they gave up key shot after key shot. And how Tennessee's only down two at halftime is beyond me. And how they didn't get just totally blown out of that game today with everything that went on is, again, is, I think, it's kind of surprising when you look at all the things that went on that, if you just looked at the numbers, would spell blowout. But at the end of the day, the Vols are in it.
They were in it, and I have no problem shooting three. You know, I kind of like the Rick Pitino philosophy of layups or three-pointers. If you get a good mid-range look, then that's cool. My problem is, if you're going to shoot the three, play to your strengths and let your good shooter shoot it, you know, and have good continuity. But watching our half-court offense reminds me of Konza ball, and there's these things that Richardson wants to do where he's dribble penetrating.
Not working.
But then it's like, I got to get, like, in their mindset, it's like, if I get 1 foot closer, that's going to equal a higher percentage. Instead of just stopping and going straight up with it and just being confident that you're going to hit a 12-foot shot or whatever. We make the weirdest-looking two-point shots, and that's where I'm like, look, if you got an open look at the basket on a three, you know, you're going to get an extra point if you make it. If you miss it, you're going to get, chances are you're going to get a good long rebound. But I think I don't have a problem with us shooting threes. It's just the lack of discipline on who's shooting it. And there was – the couple games that we won, And I'm sure there's other dynamics involved, but the last two games we've won where the tempo has been a little faster and up-tempo, I think these guys actually play better, and I'm just wondering if we should have tried to maybe gamble more on defense and just concede a basket and try to go up-tempo more with our guys, because as far as like a half-court duke-it-out game, we're not going to win that matchup against A&M.
No, in fact, if you play that game 10 times the way we played it, and they're able to do what they did today, which is to say you can't turn them over, they didn't have their first turnover against the press till about 13 minutes left. Now, down the stretch, they were sucking some fumes there a little bit. And I'll tell you something, speaking of officiating, they missed a couple of would-be walks on the front court on the press. They were extremely, to your point, once we began to really trap and get aggressive with them, extend that defense, we had them discombobulated. Did you guys see the couple of would-be walks that weren't called?
Now, there was one right after punter missed the layup.
That's exactly right.
As they were advancing the ball on that play.
That's exactly right. Right there, right around mid-court. That is exactly right.
I noticed that. And also, what kills me, too, and I don't want to blame it on officiating, but there's, you know, a couple bad calls can really change the tenor.
Not just
the point differential, but the mindset of the aggressiveness of our defense. There was one play I remember, and this goes on way too often, which drives me crazy, was it's one thing to be physical down low. The guy was posting up against Moore and went up, and Moore may have leaned his chest in, like, slightly, but his hands were straight up.
Oh, that was Carmichael's first foul.
Okay, there was no contact, and they blow the whistle. I'm like, damn. No, you know, when that happens against the defense, then they become timid all of a sudden, and they're concerned about getting fouls. But that was just nonsense. If you're not getting raked across the arms when you're trying to shoot it down low, let that stuff go. They call that ticky-tack stuff way too often, but then they'll let someone just climb your back and get an offensive rebound. And it's just the inconsistency with the level of what they allow go on. You know, it's like they swallow a camel straight out of the mat at times with these officiating.
That's,
and that totally changes the flow.
That's why the game is so... Thank you, my friend. That's why the game... Great talking to you, JJ. It's why the game is difficult to watch at times. When it's going well, though, it's a beautiful symphony. When it's not, man, woof. When you see a controversial play like the one we saw, one that in a lot of people's minds is controversial, it's really not in mine. It's not in my mind, but 865-200-5402. I think he does make a good point, Keith, about just the whole self-evaluation after this game with that coaching staff. If they get in half-court basketball games, they're going to get beat, especially by teams that can make shots.
Well, that's true, but I think also one of the reasons they were reticent to ratchet up and really try to get out and press is they tried to do that a little bit when they got down 9 in the second half, and then they were immediately down 17.
Yeah, they got run right out.
They gave up three or four really easy baskets really quick on because Reese and Armani and Carmichael and the guys playing the back line back there couldn't appear to get in sync, and they were getting layups every time on that. So I think that's probably why they were a little reticent to go back to that.
Until they had
another choice.
Katie Lewis said, "We're not watching Konzo ball. People need to stop tripping. You're going to lose some games when you don't play on an edge and play with some edge." 865-200-5402 is our number again. 865-200-5402. So far, the best tweet of the day goes to JM, who has said he's your Twitterer so far. We're early here. But he just said that, I just know that if we would have had Bruce or Konzo, that's a win today. He also said, and by the way, Rick Bird would have won that game today. Let's go back to our people just having fun with it.
That would be the Bruce Pearl that lost at home to Mississippi State the other night, right?
Got Rick Raid.
Yeah, that would be the Konzo Martin that lost by 45 points.
I think, Keith, before you go like.
Oh no, I know. He's been, no, but this isn't at JM. This is the people who think JM's being serious and are actually they're going bully. Yeah, I agree. That's those guys. This is for those guys.
The Perlinistas, as we've said,
and the Kanzites.
Charles Wayne, I couldn't agree more. He says, because my element is in the other room, so I'm not going to get up and change the channel right now. I'm kind of in a cushy spot here in the Ray Mirror studio. He said, watching this Georgia-Mississippi State game is like watching a church league game. I was thinking upward basketball, not upward. What do they call that stuff that my son used to play?
But what we're playing in the SEC is downward basketball most weeks.
It's junior pro. That's what they call it. Junior pro. Now, there's nothing like, I'll tell you this, junior pro basketball on a Saturday morning in Halls, Tennessee, with a bunch of white kids running around.
And coaches who take it way too seriously.
Oh, hey.
Who think they're the next Bob Knight.
Hey, I asked my son one day, I said, what'd your coach tell you after the game? What'd you learn about today's game? He said, he's probably 9 years old. He said, Dad, I learned it was all the referee's fault. I said, who was coaching you, Dom from Sweetwater?
I thought you were going to say that he learned that we suck.
No, he said it was all the referee's fault. I said, well, that's a valuable lesson to take out of a game. Let's go back to our phones. By the way, portions of today's program, if not the entire kit and caboodle, presented by our friends at Smartway, where you're encouraged to go smartway.net. And I referenced Smartway earlier with Willie Carmichael, who leaves the game with two fouls. He walked in with three, and he ends up only committing two fouls on the day. And what happens in Smartway is when you have an on-time lease payment and you complete your payments, you earn in-store cash credit of 2% that can be used on any item anytime you want, what you want, when you want it. And so congratulations to Willie Carmichael today, who I think scored some smart way points. Oh, to the NCAA, if you're listening, hang on. I just want to say, since you people are snooping around, I'm just kidding. Okay, to the NCAA folks listening, it's a joke. Relax here. I realize it's a witch hunt to get Donnie Tindall, but let me say something about Smart Way, located at 8416 Kingston Pike. And then we will go back to the phones with both brilliance and alacrity. And mercifully, Georgia and Mississippi State have gone to the half at 36-31. Good gosh. Smartway at 8416 Kingston Pike near Bearden High School. Everything for your home store, where you're going to pay your way and you're going to do it on your terms. Here's how it works. You walk in, the place is full of the latest and greatest in furniture, appliances, electronics, all the things the big box stores have, and beautiful. Cell phones, names like Samsung, LG, Blue, even iPhones available. And the way it works is, you can buy today, walk out, pay that low price, and go. You can go 120 day or 6 months, same as cash. Pay the cash price within the first 120 days or 6 months. Or choose a lease purchase rent to own agreement where you'll choose the payment amount and the frequency of your payment, and you can change that agreement anytime you want to. That's why we call it the Smart Way. Before we go back and grab our next call, Keith Hatfield's appearance today is presented by
Clancy's Tavern and Whiskey House in beautiful downtown Knoxville next to the historic Tennessee Theater, Tony.
Which will no doubt be getting some of your business after this performance today.
I would guess within 15 minutes of me hanging up with you, Tony, I will be handing them my credit card.
Back to the phones we go. 865-200-5402. On a day where the Vols fall to A&M, and Donnie Tindall said Tennessee's energy level was not acceptable. Absolutely not acceptable. Beano says in 1 week with Bruce Pearl in there, it will be, you talk about a mulligan. That's not just a mulligan on the golf course. That's a blackjack mulligan Tennessee will have next week. A big, huge mulligan with Auburn in here. Let's go back to our phones and grab our next call. Hello and welcome.
Marissa, it's on air.
Hey, Philly. What'd you think?
Hey, Keith.
Hey, how you doing today, Phil?
I'm doing all right. I went over there today, and the last one we got behind by 17. But
you knew it.
Well, I mean, the first half we beat. I mean, all honesty, we could talk about lack of effort. We're not that talented, and when you're not that talented, sometimes it looks like lack of effort when you go against people who got more talent than you do, and I think that's the case today. A&M, as much as I despise them, despise Rick Stansbury and Kennedy, they have a better front line than us, and their length at the guard position also affected the game. They just kind of wore us down, and we hung around, but we never could, do anything.
And like Keith said earlier, Phil, that Caruso guy, you can say whatever you want to say about him. He's a really nice college basketball player. And guys like him are rare these days. Veteran player, you can tell, doesn't let them do too many crazy things. He plays completely within himself. That was a bad matchup today. After seeing that game today, I think if we played them five times today, the game I just watched, I think they're going to beat us four out of five times, Phil. Now, one time we might have the ball go in a time or two, a little more than it did today. But for the most part, I think they're better than we are.
Yeah, and they just threw the ball over our zone the whole day.
Yes, they did.
I mean, and they don't dribble. Teams that like to dribble against our zone, we can create a few turnovers. But when you just throw passes right over it, I mean, that's the best way to attack a zone is a pass, not dribbling.
You're right.
I mean, when you're 6'5", 6'5", 6'6", across the perimeter, it's a lot easier to do that. I mean, you get these teams that have got these small guards, these 5'10" to 6'1" guys against Josh and Hunter, they can't necessarily see over them. I mean, guys like Caruso and those guys don't have that problem.
And Philly,
Donnie Kendall's going to have to get him a big guy who can block shots and force the paint, and we don't have that. I don't know if it's Tariq Owens they're going to develop into that. I don't know.
I think he will. I think he's going to be a really nice player in time, but, like Keith made the point, and you might have made it a couple days ago when you called in. If Owens is on a team that's got some depth, he's not even on the floor.
Yeah, redshirted.
We wouldn't even see him. So I think he's going to be a really nice player. They like him a lot.
Well, I mean, I'm not totally, despondent about the loss. I mean, you hate to lose to Alabama and, Texas A&M at home, but both of those teams don't run and gun. That's the type of teams we can feast on. If we're playing run and gun teams, we've got a chance. Teams that play half-court basketball that have superior talent, it's going to be hard for us to beat them.
So let's talk about that, Phil, from here. That's right, home or away. It's a great way of looking at it. So who are the teams left? Let's think about it. On Tennessee's schedule, a little round table here. Absent of John Pennington, let's do a little round table. Who are some teams, Philly, on our schedule left that you think are going to be matchup problems for us?
Well, I pretty much looked at this league pretty good. I mean, I think Georgia might be a matchup problem.
I agree.
Yeah, they're not going to throw it away much.
No, they're going to bore you to death is what they're going to do.
Kentucky's automatic loss, so we don't have to worry. We just go ahead and put them in the loss column.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, LSU's dumb enough to try to run.
I think LSU here. Do we play LSU twice down there?
Yes, we do. Here and there, and
I think we can beat them at least once.
I agree.
Coaching, because I think Johnny Jones can coach a lick.
We can.
No, I think they're dumb enough to try to run against us instead of just walking the ball up and throwing the ball to Jarrell Martin and Jordan Mickey and scoring every possession. So yeah, I think we'll have a shot at them simply because they're now. Granted, if they wise up, and as I've said all year, if Johnny Jones will just do nothing but the coaches show, like Eric Musselman coached that team, they'll pound us twice. But I don't foresee that happening.
We play Mississippi State again, and we should beat them, and we should beat South Carolina again here. Now we play Vandy twice. Now Vandy may give us a problem down there. We might beat Vandy here, but that's. I think Vanderbilt, if we could sweep Vanderbilt, we could may have a good season. I mean,
really, we've had a great season already.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? I mean,
we're probably 6 wins away from getting into the NCAA tournament, and there's a lot left. And let me tell you something. You guys want to laugh at us? I am not conceding to the Arkansas game this week. I will not concede that because they play the way we want to play. And I'll tell you something, even down there, they play the way we want to play. Go back and watch that VCU game. Teams that run with us give us a chance, and that was early in the season before we even knew what we had. But teams that play like that, I like us a lot better in that game. It lets Armani Moore be athletic. It lets Derek Reese be athletic. It negates all of our difficulties that we have with our size. A team like today that's going to sit in front of you and make you play conventional basketball, and just like you said, Phil, pounds you inside, and Caruso, and then their wing players, and House on the outside, who was killing us in the first half. You know, I mean, that was like surgery. So
yeah, House is a transfer from Houston.
Houston.
Yeah, that's what Tennessee needs.
That's right.
When he goes out in the spring, unless he can get a JUCO that's that good, I'd get a fifth-year player to come in here who can come right in here and start.
Well, I know for a fact.
They didn't even like you with House. They didn't even like you with House. He's not a graduate transfer.
No, he's a freshman. Philly, he was a...
He's like a sophomore.
That's
he's
right.
He's like a sophomore ineligible. You're a junior.
No, he was the freshman of the year.
And they cleared,
cleared
him.
And they
they
cleared him. I have no idea.
One of those hardships, I'm sure that he said that he had some reason that he needed to be in College Station instead of Houston.
You talk about a great addition. You know why what that reason was? When Stansberry shows up on their staff, Philly, things like that happen. It's like the time Dante Jones finished 27 hours in one summer.
Yeah, but I've been looking at this basketball recruiting for they've got a great recruiting class.
Yes, they do.
Yep. And so does LSU. Of course, you know Kentucky will be number one as always, so we're going to have to recruit at least some players good enough we can compete with these guys next year.
I think that this team next year, Phil, will be better because I think some guys will take another step, and I think Mostella, with a year in the weight room, look how skinny he is. I think with a year in the weight room, they're going to turn him into a real nice player. I think Tennessee will be okay next year.
Yeah, they got to get a true point guard and a big guy, Tony.
Absolutely.
That's all they need. I mean,
absolutely.
But, I hate to lose, but I mean, you know, I felt that as soon as I started watching that today. I don't know what y'all felt.
I felt it. I knew that was coming. Yeah. You watch enough basketball. I mean, heck, you see that matchup
like
difficulty.
That.
I mean, you're either going to, here's the thing about today. You're either going to shoot the ball in that game at 56, 57% and make a good number of threes and get on them early, or you're going to lose that game. And there's no other recipe. Like you said, Phil, and Tindall did say he didn't like the effort, the level of effort of his team. I give him credit for that.
Yeah.
But
I shot more threes today than we did. After Briz, the only chance we had to win was to shoot threes.
That's what JJ was saying. And I don't know. I don't like 29 threes. I don't like that style.
If you don't have an inside game, you got to do something.
Well, that is true. I mean, Keith, where are you on that? We shoot 29 threes is what we shot today.
Well, I didn't think they took too many today. I'll put it that way. I didn't think it was a thing where we were just standing around checking threes. I mean, I thought most of them were decent looks. So I didn't have anything wrong with the way they played today. Because, I mean, honestly, I don't want to sound like I'm beating up on a guy who's being put in an impossible situation where he's being put in where he has to fail. I mean, honestly, why the hell do we even throw the ball to Willie Carmichael in the post?
That's a great point.
That's interesting right there.
Because he's so uncomfortable.
Yeah, the ball, it's a turnover
waiting to happen.
Every time we do it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, nothing good happens when we do it. They don't respect it. It's not like a bunch of guys crash down in there to double him.
Yeah.
So I don't even know why we bother to do that first.
And Philly, that's why, and I'm not making excuses for these guys, because you got to play what's in front of you. But that's why the loss of this team, the loss of McGee just is gigantic. It's gigantic.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're 12-6, Phil. Without McGee, you get at least a game difference, maybe two, with a guy like that. I mean, you are much more competitive against Alabama and in this game with some form of an inside presence. And he's a tough guy, too, by the way.
Do you think Armani Moore will play the four next year, or they'll move him to the three next year?
Got to move, right? Got to move.
I don't think he shoots it well enough to move him.
That's a great point.
Well, that's a good point.
So what are you going to do with him?
If he can develop an outside shot, sure, that'd be probably the optimal place to play him. But if he doesn't develop something of a perimeter shot, I don't know how in the world. I mean, because then you're playing 4-on-5 offensively because nobody's going to guard him outside 10 feet.
Well, that's right, and you got Hubs and Bachman that can play the three next year, so I think our three is going to be okay. But and Mostella and Punter at the two, there we go, 1-5. What are we going to do?
I agree. I'll tell you what I thought. The most encouraging thing to me today was of the whole game.
What's that?
I take out of it at any time in his career since he's been here, have we ever seen Robert Hubbs play lousy for 30 minutes and then do anything at the end of a game like
absolutely.
He did today?
Absolutely. So well put. So well put.
Intestinal fortitude, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, every time he's played poorly at the start of a game since he's been here, when he's played bad for most of the flow of the game, it's not like it ever gets any better. I thought that, I mean, that would probably, if I were looking for one silver lining out of today, that'd be the one I'd take.
Well, Keith, I'm about to get out and drink a few beers with you sometime. I heard you had a late night excursion with LCIP.